My league sources say Steph Curry and Steve Kerr have concerns about Jimmy Butler's personality fit in the Warriors, which will be the topic that leads part one of the trade deadline countdown edition of my podcast. Part two will be out overnight into Friday morning, so be sure to stay tuned for that. That's coming up. Part one. Welcome back to another episode of the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, bringing on Tom Haberstroh to talk about the NBA trade deadline, which is coming in 1 week. We went through the Warriors, the latest that I'm hearing there, the Grizzlies, the Kings with De'Aaron Fox, teams that should tank or shouldn't tank, teams that need to make a move or don't need to make a move. All that's coming up now with Tom. All right, Tom, you ready to talk trades?
Let's do it, man.
So I reported on Tuesday that the Warriors were back in the mix for Jimmy Butler. Later that same night, Shams Charania over at ESPN confirmed that report. And since then, there's been a lot of talk about that. There was a great piece over at The Athletic written by Anthony Slater and Marcus Thompson that was published on Wednesday that expanded on these talks and the complications from the Warrior side of things. And in there, they wrote, "When the Butler saga exploded in Miami, the Warriors quickly bowed out of any discussions. There was zero push from any layer of the organization to get something done for Butler. Adding Butler raises combustion possibilities. Zach LaVine is viewed by some within the organization as the safer option." So I've got some more detail to add to that. My league sources say Stephen Curry specifically has concerns about Jimmy Butler's fit in the Warriors locker room, and Steve Kerr shares those feelings. So Golden State's indecision about trading for Butler seems to be largely tied to Steph and Kerr's worries about the personality fit there. And so while I've not heard, Draymond Green also shares those concerns. It is interesting that on his own podcast, he went out there and talked about it, detailing the challenges trading for Butler's $48 million salary. And that echoes the concerns, of course, that the Warriors front office would have with everything that they have to give up to go get Butler. The Warriors have a big win over the Thunder on Wednesday. They're still the 11th seed, but they're only four games back from the four seed. So I could certainly see them just saying, screw it, trading for Butler, going for it this season, optimizing their chances, and maybe it works beautifully. Maybe they make a deep run. And then if it doesn't work, there'd be nothing stopping them from just letting him go if he opts out this summer, or trading him again if he were to opt in. And that's a scenario to think about for Golden State. But it should surprise nobody that if the Warriors just end up holding on to their pieces, waiting until the summer, hope Kevin Durant wants to head back to the Bay Area or some other star wants to go there, and they bypass the chance to go get Jimmy Butler.
Well, KOC, first of all, thanks for confirming what seemed to be the case, right? Is that if Steph Curry wanted Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Butler would be on the Warriors right now, right? And the fact that there wasn't more smoke there with Jimmy Butler connected to the Warriors, it makes sense that there was a hesitation or reluctance from the Steph Curry side, because everything goes through Steph. And we talked about it last week, whether that should be the case, that do you need Stephen Curry's sign off if they make a big move like that, or trading Stephen Curry to what we talked about last week, the San Antonio Spurs. But if you're Steph Curry and you're looking at the situation, you're like, I can have Draymond Green, and that might be, you know, a combustible force in that locker room already. Do I want to add another piece like that, that you don't know if those personalities will mesh? Forget about you and Jimmy Butler. What about Draymond and Jimmy Butler? We saw Kevin Durant, who was Kevin Durant, get into it with Draymond Green in a game, famously against the Clippers a few years ago, and there was tension there. So that was with Kevin Durant in his prime. What about Jimmy Butler, who's got this, you know, like, remember the spark that was between Jordan Poole and Draymond was over money. Can you imagine if Jimmy Butler's trying to play for his next extension and it becomes at a collision course with Draymond Green and what Stephen Curry has built up? So I think on paper, I love the Jimmy Butler acquisition. Like, the idea of a Jimmy Butler fiery type to kind of light something underneath the Golden State Warriors that they beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, where all of those rotation pieces, the kind of filler on the roster, all came and coalesced in one night. But how much can you depend on that in the postseason going forward? And how much can you expect Gary Payton II to do what he did? And the dunk was amazing. But to me, Kev,
it was awesome.
it was incredible. And it
he
was
loaded
like,
up. Oh, he had like a second leap midair to get. It's crazy.
And you're like, why can't they do that every night? And it's because, you know, Kyle Anderson, slow-mo, I was like, where's he been all season? And he was making contributions there down the stretch. Steph hits the big three. And you're just like, man, when they all come together, they don't need a Jimmy Butler. But that is so few and far between that I feel like the Golden State Warriors feel Jimmy Butler on paper makes a lot more sense. But the Jimmy Butler with the extension expectations, it might be just too much for them to handle with that locker room.
It's a tough decision. I mean, look, if you feel like you got a shot, Butler does raise your ceiling with what you can be. But I do think he also lowers your floor in certain ways, too, with the personality aspect. So, I mean, like that, the article written by Marcus Thompson and Anthony Slater kind of like talks about a lot of these little things without saying directly Steph and Kerr and all these concerns. But it's like every level of the organization. That line in there is so profound that they wrote because it's true. Whether it's ownership, front office, coaching staff, or players, there's like hesitation with should we really be going for this guy? I do think it's a real thing. Now, I mentioned this. There is the flip side of it, whether it's Zach LaVine, the safer option, as they call him, or whether it is Butler, who has a player option for next season. You could trade for Butler and then flip him for KD or whoever this offseason as an expiring salary. But of course, that's a very complicated scenario. And the first deal you make is the only deal that you'd ideally want to make. That puts you in a really tough position if you're Golden State. Do you think they should be rolling the dice and going for it, Tom? Or are you standing pat as the Warriors and playing this out in the way we've been talking about with being patient and then reviewing your options this offseason?
Yeah, man, it's such a tough spot for the Warriors because if you acquire Jimmy Butler and everything goes well, then he's going to want an extension. On the other side, you could try to move him in the summer, and maybe if he goes well, you can flip him to maybe the ultimate prize is Kevin Durant.
Tough.
But if the Suns are acquiring Jimmy Butler in that trade, they're not going to be doing it without Kevin Durant. So they're not going to go all in with Jimmy Butler or anyone else. Like, it just... it's the worst of both worlds in a sense is that like if he does well,
yes,
it's just who's going to take on Jimmy Butler on that contract. So I do think that the Golden State Warriors should acquire somebody at the deadline and at least show Stephen Curry and Draymond Green that they want to maximize this window here because they deserve it. They're good enough right now, Steph Curry and Draymond, to contend in 2025. And I don't know how often you can say that with Steph Curry. It wasn't his best night. But like if you add a Zach LaVine to that picture or like say Lauri Markkanen, who's not on the same timeline as the rebuilding Utah
well,
Jazz.
Lauri cannot be traded. Lauri
right,
cannot
I'm saying
be
this
traded
summer.
Right
I'm yes. saying yes, if yes, you yes. acquire Zach LaVine right now, you have a bird in the hand. Or you say, sure. Look, let's kick the can to this summer. Let's keep Kuminga and Moody and the young pieces in case a team like Utah is like, okay, we're ready to move on from Markkanen. Let's see what assets you have. That's why you don't kind of trade for Zach LaVine now is that you want all of those pieces in place in case a rebuilding team or a team that has a disgruntled star ends up saying, all right, let's play ball.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately it wouldn't shock me at all if the Warriors just end up trading for like Vooch. Get Vooch, Nikola Vucevic from the center from the Bulls, something like that. We see them start Quentin Post, their rookie center
yeah.
on Wednesday night against OKC. Like kind of it gives an idea of what it would look like with a floor spacing big out there with that lineup. So I think for the Warriors, I would not trade for Jimmy Butler. I don't think it's worth it. He's 35 years old. He's a malcontent. He's burned the bridges of every single team he's ever played for when he's left. He's caused issues anytime he's been there. I don't think he's worth it for the Warriors. I think the path we've talked about, the rebuild path would make more sense. I think the be patient and pray somebody becomes available is the better path for the Warriors to take. I would not go down the Jimmy Butler road. With that said, the Warriors are back in these conversations because the price has been lowered. And Shams Charania, or maybe it was Brian Windhorst earlier in the week, was the first to report that the price has been lowered by Miami. Now, what's driving Miami's lower asking price besides the fact that they can't find anything? I'm told specifically one of the concerns there, the threat is the Nets. And the Nets are a threat because they have a ton of cap space this summer. They're not a threat to sign Butler necessarily. They could be, depending on what else they do. But they're more of a threat to take on money for a team that would then sign Butler. Rockets would be the most obvious team there. They have some cap space this offseason, but not enough to give Butler what he wants. Well, the Nets could just take on some money from Houston, and suddenly Houston could just sign Jimmy Butler outright into space, and then Miami ends up with nothing. So that is,
but they
my
would have cap
sense.
Space. They would. When Miami could get off Jimmy Butler's money and yes. have a lot more flexibility to make moves because his money just evaporates. So it isn't necessarily like they get him for nothing. But sure. to your point, what if Jimmy Butler? They don't trade Jimmy
you want
Butler.
Both.
Jimmy Butler's like
you want something and cap space.
yeah,
that's what
right.
you want.
I mean,
ideally,
that's what you want. Like if Phoenix didn't have that, if Phoenix didn't trade that 2031 pick to Utah, you're talking to Bradley Beal and you're like, all right, fine. We'll take Bradley Beal's contract, but we're going to have to get that 2031 unprotected pick. Miami doesn't have that option right now. And I don't really think they're going to be looking at a straight up deal for Bradley Beal, even though, you know, they might come up empty handed here in the next week. And that's the tough thing for Miami is like, if Jimmy Butler does the James Harden where he's like, you didn't trade me, I'm going to pick up this player option and you're not going to have that cap space and it's going to be tougher for you. And I'm going to continue to be this malcontent, as you called.
Yeah. I mean, look, for Miami, whether it's 25 cap space or 26 cap space, I think 26 probably is ideally what Miami would like to have in terms of the options that could be out there that summer compared to this summer, because teams can implode. They're, like if you look on the horizon of the stars that are going to become available, I don't think it's necessarily going to be too strong this offseason. Things can always change, but Miami would probably have a better bet in 2026. And you mentioned, Tom, like Miami doesn't want to come up empty-handed here. And so Phoenix, obviously, that's where Butler wants to go. That, you know, Matt Ishbia, the Suns owner, wants to go get Jimmy Butler and pair him with KD and Devin Booker. The issue is finding somebody for Bradley Beal. And I'm intrigued here with all these different sides, because I've heard that Beal won't waive his no trade clause for Chicago. Others have reported that he doesn't want to play for a cold weather city. I've heard that he wants to play for a contender. There's just so much stuff floating out there. It's hard to know exactly what is real, right? But what is real is both Beal and his wife have talked about all the treatment they've been getting from Suns fans, like saying, oh, they're yelling at us. We have kids and all that. First of all, get a babysitter for the next 2 weeks and just don't take your kids to the games. Just
hey, have you heard the babysitter inflation these days? Babysitter inflation is crazy. I'm telling you, man, I got two kids.
It is. Hey, Tom,
there's a shortage.
You're making $52 million.
I'm not. It's only $51 million. I don't know if Yahoo's told you that, KOC.
Good for you, Tom.
But listen.
Well, let me finish my thought real quick. I just don't want to, you know, nag on his family there. But get a babysitter for the next week. But also, I just have a hard time believing that Beal and his family wouldn't want to leave Phoenix, even if it's for Chicago. I just have a hard time believing that you'd want to stay there when clearly the fans don't want you. You're seeing it firsthand. It's not just on social media. They're hearing it at games. And the franchise doesn't want you either. I just... all the stuff I've heard that others have reported about him not wanting to go certain places. I don't know, man. It just feels like maybe you would want to go somewhere else and prove yourself and show that you're still worth something and be in a place that might actually be happier to have you. Because if someone's trading for you with that money, they clearly have a reason to want you. Clearly. That they believe there's some value there.
Yeah, KOC, to me, all this is just posturing. Like right now, it's leverage points by agencies and by teams. They're saying like Bradley Beal only wants to go to these situations. But when push comes to shove, does Bradley Beal and his family want to endure another year of hearing about that no trade clause and dealing with all the boos and what seems to be an organization that is going down the toilet, right? That seems to me like a combustible situation too for Bradley Beal and his family. And remember, KOC, this family aspect, it's a lot bigger deal than I think a lot of fans realize. They're human beings and their families. Remember, what was it that Josh Harris, why he pulled the plug on the process and Sam Hinkie and that whole thing? It was reportedly that Josh Harris's kids had to hear about, you know, how bad the 76ers were and how they've essentially tanked the entire 76ers pride and the glory and the legacy of the 76ers. And the kids got bullied at school. And so there is this element that we forget about because all the trade machine and all the gambling and sports betting, we forget that there's real human beings behind this. And so the Bradley Beal situation, unfortunately, is a product of that no trade clause. It's kind of this blessing and a curse for Bradley Beal. Is he gets the final say of where he goes, but also it's an anvil on his trade value for other teams to acquire him. So something's got to give, but I think a lot of this, like, oh, he doesn't want to be in a cold weather climate. He wants to be in a winning situation. I think this is all just a bunch of posturing.
I agree, Tom. I think that's all it is. And at the end of the day, maybe he would end up waiving his no trade clause. That also does not mean that the Suns would end up having the best offer. There's also a possibility that somebody else could step up, or maybe nobody does want to take Beal, and that there's some other team out there that could go get Jimmy Butler. And the team that people mention is the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies are the team that a lot of people around the league are saying, watch out for Memphis. If it's not Phoenix, watch out for Memphis. And I thought it was interesting. Pauly Market, everybody, you know, on social media has heard about Pauly Market with the presidential election and all that. What are the odds? Trump versus Biden and all that. Well, they also have sports stuff on there. And they have, I looked this morning, where will Jimmy Butler get traded? They currently have those odds up there. 31% not traded, 28% to the Suns. 11% third place to the Grizzlies, higher odds than the Warriors. I think 31% is too high for not traded. I think 28% is probably a little too high for the Suns. And I think 11% is too low for the Grizzlies. What does Miami want? They want salary cap relief. The Grizzlies have some short-term salaries that they can piece together for Butler. There's also the option to maybe flip one of those guys, Marcus Smart, maybe to a third team, to a contending team, and get an expiring salary in return from Miami. There's a lot of ways to juggle those pieces that Memphis could offer. They also have some young guys. They have some assets if those are necessary. But if the Heat aren't able to get a great deal in return, the Grizzlies seem like that situation that they could just fall back on. But Jimmy Butler doesn't want to be in Memphis. So for Memphis, this would purely just be a roll of the dice, Kawhi Leonard to the Raptors style, Paul George to the Thunder style, see how it goes, and then reevaluate this offseason.
For Memphis, you have the same situation that Miami is in. Is like, do you really want to pay an extension, sign Jimmy Butler to an extension? And if you don't, you're going to be signing what could be a lit fuse here, right? So for Memphis, I get it. You take a big swing. If you look at the Western Conference, Minnesota and Dallas are battered and down from what they were last year. Maybe there's an opening here. The Golden State Warriors just beat the Thunder last night. You might be looking at this situation and saying, okay, maybe this is our time to go in. But Jimmy Butler and his desire for that extension, they've got big money for Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant already on the books. I don't see that as being a long-term solution. If you're Memphis, that seems like a swing and a miss to me.
Well, I agree. It's probably not a long-term solution. He's 35, and he doesn't want to be there. Like, even if, let's say the Grizzlies got word that Jimmy Butler changed his mind, and he's like, okay, I'll go to Memphis. It's like you're the second choice. But, like, clearly, he's already said for weeks he doesn't want to be there. And then if he changes his mind and says, okay, yes, I do want to be in Memphis, he's just settling for you. And so you know that. But for Memphis, Tom, here's the thing. Let's just say they were to get Jimmy Butler without a long-term commitment. They could just let him walk this summer or trade him this summer, and then they could be a cap space team. So that's like the path for Memphis, where maybe he's a true rental at a low price where Miami, what they get isn't even first round picks. It's just merely getting off this dude and having their young core with Khalil Ware and Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero and the good things happening there. And Memphis just gets a shot, increasing their chances for the next, you know, rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't like the playing style.
You don't
want
to do it.
I don't want to swing. Jimmy Butler, with that extension hanging over, I don't know how bought in he's going to be. Of course, if you acquire Jimmy Butler and he tanks the rest of the season because he's unhappy about the financial aspect and the possibility of not getting that extension, that hurts Jimmy Butler. So in a sense, they're mutually aligned in that sense that Jimmy Butler has to play well with Memphis to have other contending teams be like, okay, he's willing to play nice. I'll go and sign him to an extension or trade for him and make sure that he's on my team. Phoenix would be the one that wants to have Jimmy Butler long term. But Memphis, the playing style, they're the fastest team in the NBA. They don't play the same kind of slow it down, dribble the ball, and make sure you can attack in the half court that Jimmy Butler excels in. I just don't think it's a good fit financially. It's a risk. Maybe they go all in, but OKC is too good. I just don't see how that would be a good idea for Memphis to swing for Jimmy Butler right now. But
and the Grizzlies also play such an unorthodox style of play with like the lowest amount of pick and rolls and handoffs in the league by far.
Yeah.
And Butler having to adapt to that in the middle of the season with limited practice time, it feels like a really, really, really big risk for the Grizzlies to make a move like that. We'll take a quick break, and when we're back, we'll talk more about De'Aaron Fox and a whole bunch of other stuff. Okay, Tom, De'Aaron Fox. We got to talk about Fox. Sham Sharania reported earlier this week the Kings are open to trading De'Aaron Fox. We've heard some stuff since then that the Spurs are the team at the top of his list. Vinny Goodwill over at Yahoo Sports, our coworker, says the Rockets and Heat are also on Fox's list. I don't believe that's been out there too much at all. But the Spurs seem to be number one on the list here. Fox's wife is from San Antonio. Fox himself is from near Houston. He's from Texas, so they have Texas roots. Before the season, I had heard some real rumblings that if Fox were to leave, Texas would be the place he'd want to go. And here we are, 1 week from the deadline, Tom, and this is becoming a thing. What type of package do you think the Kings should be looking for here? Should they be looking for picks, players? What path should they be going?
The Donovan Mitchell package. That's the asking price. Mitchell.
Ton of picks,
but don't forget, they got Markkanen. They got Sexton, who was coming. He just signed an extension, and he was 24 years old at the time of the deal. Now we look back at the Sexton acquisition and not as a piece, but he was a young piece along with Markkanen. And they got the 2022 first round pick, Agbaji, who was just drafted. So they got three firsts unprotected, two pick swaps, and Agbaji that was already it was basically effectively another first round pick.
That's
so
a think lot, about Tom. That. That's a lot.
Three young players, three firsts, and two pick swaps. Now, that's the asking price. That's the benchmark for De'Aaron Fox. If you're Sacramento Kings, you say, look, a great young player, an all-star who is the clutch player of the year. He has under contract for next season. What is my incentive to move him right now? You're going to have to come in with multiple first-round picks, at least three first-round picks, and a young player to build around. And that's where things get really interesting. If you're the San Antonio Spurs and you have the opportunity to go get De'Aaron Fox, you obviously want to pair Victor Wembanyama with another star for this very reason we talked about last week. For the next 3 years, Victor Wembanyama is going to be paid $14 million on average. This season, the season after that, and the season after that. If you acquire De'Aaron Fox, you are getting an all-star caliber player who plays downhill in the way that you're so desperately needing a guy to go downhill in drives. He's one of the top drivers in the NBA. The San Antonio Spurs are a bottom five driving team. De'Aaron Fox has family, you know, ties to Texas, like you laid out. This seems like a seamless fit. Sacramento gets on the phone and says, all right, Steph Castle coming our way and a couple first round picks. And you're the Spurs, and you're like, no, that's not going to happen. We're not going to put Stephen Castle into the deal.
No, I'm not giving you Castle.
What's it going to take?
No.
What's it going to take? You, in order to salary match, you're going to have to put...
I'm not giving Castle. Castle's a non-starter for me. I'm not giving him. I will not give him okay. up on a Fox deal.
But if you're Sacramento, that's the price that it's going to take. You look at benchmark deals of all-star players in their prime. And granted, De'Aaron Fox has only been to one all-star. Donovan Mitchell was three-time all-star. And Donovan Mitchell was 2 years younger than what Fox is right now. So
and more he's playoff also success under for contract. Mitchell, too. More playoff success and experience on Mitchell's side, too. And a better player.
So, yep, a better player. I think are objectively a better player at the time of the deal than what De'Aaron Fox is now. So if you lower that asking price, and you're like, all right, not three firsts and two swaps and three young players. It lowers the bar a little bit. But for San Antonio, if the deal is Zach Collins and Keldon Johnson and five first round picks, I don't think Sacramento like says no to that, but it's going to have to be that caliber of package because the San Antonio Spurs aren't going to put Castle in a deal. Do they put Devin Vassell into a deal? Because I think you want Vassell around Wemby and De'Aaron Fox. What is the trade package look like, KOC? Because if Donovan Mitchell got that package and you're working off of that template, it's going to be very hard to find a one-on-one deal here between the San Antonio Spurs and the Sacramento Kings.
That's why I think a three-way deal could make some sense. I put out an idea on X earlier in the week. It was a three-way, including, you know, Utah, coincidentally, sending John Collins and Colin Sexton to the Kings, and it's part of a three-way deal. And that some of those San Antonio salaries you're alluding to would then instead go to Utah, with picks going to the Kings, picks going to the Jazz, Fox going to the Spurs. Now, some Kings fans loved it. A lot of Kings fans tried to rip my head off, and they hated me for it. A lot of Jazz fans liked it. Some were like, eh, you know, we don't want these salaries. Spurs fans all seem to really like it. I think the Kings would probably get more than I put in that deal over on X, but ultimately, I think for the Kings, I don't love the Spurs players on my team, unless it's Castle. Unless it's Vassell, and even with Vassell, it's been kind of a down year for him after, you know, entering the season a bit late due to injury. I like Vassell a lot, but if I'm the Kings, I'd rather the heavy picks-based package, even if it means not getting the player incentives like you're talking about with like Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton going to the Jazz and that Mitchell deal. Ultimately, though, you know, the Kings are obviously under some pressure here. They have a player who hasn't explicitly, you know, demanded a trade, but clearly they don't feel confident he wants to be there long term. That's why they're having these discussions. But they also have time, like you alluded to. He has another year in his deal. They could play this out. The team's been playing really well lately. Maybe they go into the playoffs and they win a round and Fox loves it there and he wants to re-sign and woo, everything's happy and good this summer. That's the scenario the Spurs need to be afraid of here, because the Spurs, it's San Antonio. It's not a big market. It's not a place that stars really ever want to go. And they have an opportunity to go get a top player who wants to be there. And this is the window. Like, when will there be an opportunity again to get a star who wants to be on your team and a star that becomes available? Like, I just look around the market, like, who's the next guy? Like, you can dream about Anthony Edwards. You can dream about some of these guys for years from now, but there's no guarantee that that guy's ever going to become available. And if he does become available, it might not be in a situation where it makes sense for you to put the best offer on the table. So the Spurs are definitely under pressure to make Victor Wembanyama happy, to try to maximize what this team can be when he's on that rookie deal. And Fox might be the best shot that they can take. So they're under pressure here as well to get something done.
Well, like KOC, think about it this way. The Wemby contract is going to pay him Max Strus money going forward over the next 2.5 years. You have an opportunity to get De'Aaron Fox and Wemby for what the Utah Jazz are paying Lauri Markkanen over the next 2 years. Their combined salary is going to be about $50 million. So you get De'Aaron Fox and Wemby for basically what like a max guy is. You basically get two max guys for the price of one. So if you're San Antonio, you're incentivized to go get a guy right now. I would say, KOC, it might be a little bit different than like, hey, who wants to go to San Antonio? I think it might be, hey, who doesn't want to go play with Wemby? Like, Wemby is such an attractive guy that, like, I could see guys being like, all right, if I can play with that guy, I will go play on Mars to play with that guy, right? Like, I think that De'Aaron Fox, while it is a...
Is that his homeland, Tom? Do you know something we don't? Is Mars his homeland?
Wait, getting on one of those starships? Sources tell me. So I think when you look at this situation, the San Antonio Spurs have to strike with a star. And maybe Giannis comes available. Or it's a situation where, hey, who thought that they would sign up to go play in Milwaukee? Well, Damian Lillard got traded there and seems to be fairly happy playing with Giannis and Antetokounmpo. So if you're the Spurs, you're trying to see, am I going to keep my powder keg dry for a star like that? Is there another guy who's going to be better than De'Aaron Fox who comes down and becomes available in the next year or so? That's tough. It's hard to project into the future, but the fit, it's a seamless fit with Victor Wembanyama. You need a guy, a high usage guy who plays downhill, who's not necessarily a natural playmaker, but when you have someone that talented in Victor Wembanyama, you don't need a Chris Paul, a prime Chris Paul to be your facilitator. You can play through Victor Wembanyama in ways that De'Aaron Fox, if he doesn't have to be a high usage guy on your team. I like the deal for the Spurs. It's just coming together on what De'Aaron Fox is worth to the Sacramento Kings. And lastly on this, Sacramento Kings are sending their first round pick this year to Atlanta if it's not falling within the top 12. Is there a chance that the Sacramento Kings are more willing to take the pick package instead of getting a young contributing piece? Because, hey, if you're trading De'Aaron Fox, is it time to play for that retaining the Sacramento pick that could be Cooper Flagg if things break right?
Well, that'd be my path if I'm the Kings. I would love to retain that pick if I'm the Kings. Right now, it has the 12th best odds currently, and they are only 2.5 back from the Spurs for the 10th best odds, and then they're only 4.5 back from the Sixers for the 8th best odds. So they're not far off from having top 10 odds, which is, you know, a quarter of a chance to move into the top four. And we'll talk in a minute about some teams that, you know, should or shouldn't tank. But one last thought on the Spurs, Tom. The idea of getting Fox, for regardless of what, if it's a fair price, if it's not that Mitchell package, something a little bit less, they'd still have a lot of leftover assets to go get a third guy. And having Fox with Victor makes you more appealing to those guys who want to win a championship regardless of where it is. But if it's just Victor, I mean, this team is not a top six seed. They have really struggled as of late. Victor, as great as he is still very up and down as a young player, in part because of the supporting cast being so weak. If you have Fox, a proven high-level point guard, and Victor Wembanyama on the ascent, it makes your team, your franchise, all the more appealing. So that's also what I think the Spurs would be getting with De'Aaron Fox in a deal, is looking like something that's worth going to. Right now, it's just the idea of Victor. And Fox sees that on top of it being home for him. So teams that should be tanking. You and I both agree that the Kings, with the package they get in return, it'd be better to have top 10 odds for the chance to keep your pick rather than trying to make the play-in and probably getting blasted in the first round. We agree there. There are a bunch of other teams that are in this situation as well. So let's play a little game of to tank or not to tank. Starting with the Chicago Bulls, Tom. The Bulls right now have the 9th best odds in the NBA draft lottery. They've won some games this year. Zach LaVine is playing his ass off, but they're the 10th spot in the play-in. I think this is clear cut. The Bulls should be trying to tank out of that. What do you think? To tank or not to tank?
Tank. Look, the Chicago Bulls have to pick a direction here. Arturis Kornishovas and the organization have been resistant to doing anything other than being on that hamster wheel of mediocrity.
Great pronunciation, Tom. Great.
Yeah.
I just stick to AK because I'm an idiot. I just say AK.
Well, I think when you look at the Chicago Bulls.
Dumb Americans.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is they are so far away from contending They are so far away from having like a future that you can believe in. And you have the Golden State Warriors who are like wanting Vooch. They could use Zach LaVine and they have young pieces. And yeah, Kuminga's hurt. I do think if you're the Chicago Bulls, you punt and you retain the option, that the chance that you have a core around Bezelis, Kobe White, and then Cooper Flagg. Like, I think a lot of teams need to be thinking about this realistically about your future. Zach LaVine, to me, makes a lot of sense on a contending team, whether it's Milwaukee or Golden State. You can talk yourself into a lot of teams that can acquire Zach LaVine, and it's incumbent on that organization to finally decide where you're going rather than just being in the purgatory of the NBA. They have a top 10 protected pick, and I think in this draft, when you have a chance to get into that top three, this is the moment because, yeah, teams don't have an incentive to lose once you're like at the very bottom. But think of like the hockey stick that we talk about in finance or in tech industry, the hockey stick where it accelerates your chances. You want to get a stock that will go up like a hockey stick. Think about the chances of you getting Cooper Flagg is kind of like if you rotate that hockey stick 90 degrees, at a certain point, it doesn't incentivize you to lose anymore if you're the Wizards or if you're the Hornets. But if you're Chicago, it is the marginal increase on your chances of getting Cooper Flagg go way up if you move from 12 to 7, right? That's huge. You saw the Atlanta Hawks last year get the number one overall pick. And yeah, the odds are what they are, but you can increase your odds dramatically, 2, 3, 4, 5x, if you put in the tank right now and you say, Zach LaVine, Vooch, see you later. We're going into the tank for Cooper Flagg. They should.
That's the Bulls are the 10 seed currently in the East. The 9 seed is the Hawks. They have no choice. The Spurs own their pick. They don't want to tank. They have no choice in the matter. But they lose Jalen Johnson. Unfortunately, it's going to be a lot tougher for them to actually make the postseason. The 8 seed right now is the Detroit Pistons. They've lost 3 games in a row. They're 23-24. Cade Cunningham looks like an all-star. It's been a really impressive step up for them this season. But to tank or not to tank, Tom, what do you do if you're the Pistons?
I think you tank. I think this has been a great season for Cade. I think you don't overshoot things and talk yourself into like, hey, we're a playoff team. You're only a playoff team because you're in the Eastern Conference, okay? I think Detroit should be in the Cooper Flagg game. They've had already overachieved big time this season, and you're built for the future. You're built for who's going to be our piece next to Cade Cunningham 3 years down the line. They don't have that piece right now. Jaden Ivey looked like he could be that piece, but he just broke his leg, and the timetable gets a little bit reset back. I think
could it be if you're the Detroit Oscar Thompson, and we just don't know it yet with the way Amen Thompson has blossomed with Houston? Could his brother Oscar be that guy? It's just the opportunity is a bit behind right now.
I want more bites at the apple. In this draft, I want to make sure that I have a chance at moving up and getting an Ace Bailey or a Dylan Harper or a Cooper Flagg. And to me, like, it's precarious. They're going to be in the play-in, and it's not like necessarily tank. I think if they just keep things going the way that they are, there's a chance that they already will be in the, you know, retain that pick. So it's not necessarily that they need to quote unquote tank. It's just, I wouldn't necessarily go in all in if you're the Detroit Pistons with the way that this roster is set up. I think in the long term, I'd be cold hearted for the Pistons fans that want to see them in the playoffs. But I think the Pistons fans ultimately want to see Cade's running mate. And right to me, he's not on the roster right now as much of a bet that Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey or Dylan Harper or whoever, you're the draft expert. I think those pieces might be more promising as Cade's co-pilot than what we're seeing right now on that roster.
I think you're right, Tom. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't think you're necessarily trading anybody away to make it happen, but maybe keep a guy out with a turn angle for an extra week just to be extra safe. That's the path I'd go with Detroit. And I wouldn't, like, as you said, with 1 week to the deadline, I wouldn't want to go out and add anybody going all in. I'm not doing that if I'm Detroit. I'm happy keeping the status quo with my roster, being real conservative with bringing guys back from injury once they inevitably happen, as they do for every team. Because for them, Ace Bailey or somebody else, Ace Bailey would be a, oh my God, the way he shoots the ball, perfect fit next to Cade Cunningham as a running mate for him. He looks like Michael Porter Jr. the way he's been playing lately, except even more of a shot creator. The dude's nasty. So I think for Detroit, I agree with you there. What about Philadelphia 76ers? They've been winning some games as of late. They've won four in a row. They're 19-27, 11 seed in the Eastern Conference, four games back from the sixth seed. So they're not completely out of getting a guaranteed spot, but it's going to be tough to climb. What path are you going if you're the Sixers, Tom?
Top six protected, or it goes to OKC. Right now, you're eighth in those odds. I think you pull the plug on the season. I think you look at Paul George and you say you're banged up, and Joel Embiid, you're banged up. I know Tyrese Maxey; he's been playing really well, deservedly in the All-Star conversation. But if I'm looking at the realistic scenario, being pragmatic about the situation where Jared McCain's already out for the season, it seems like there's some sort of hex on the organization this season. I say you play for that you bottom out and play for that top six protected pick, especially even if you don't land at the number one pick, that's still something that a draft asset that you could trade and try to get something, or attach it to Paul George's contract, or attach it to another contract to try to get something, even if it isn't Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey or Cooper Flagg. I just feel like that could be very valuable in a very difficult, inflexible situation for the 76ers right now. They're cornered. If Paul George didn't have a great year this year and Joel Embiid was hurt, this is almost worst case scenario. But if you send that pick over to OKC, that is the worst case scenario. You're bad, you're eight games under 500, and you're still not able to recoup what would be kind of this carrot at the end of a terrible season. That would be the worst case scenario. That would be a nightmare situation if you have the seventh pick, but you have to give it to OKC, and you have nothing to show for this season.
It's heartbreaking. It really is to think about. Hey, at least the Eagles are in the Super Bowl, right? I mean, Philly's got something right now going good for them. But I think with Philly, it's a complicated situation because, like, my gut instinct is, yes, I agree with you. Tank it out and try to keep that pick and get a reward. At the same time, like, waiting another year for Joel Embiid to maybe stay healthy next season? What if this is your last shot? Like, what if Embiid at 30 years, he turns 31 in March. He's on the wrong side of 30 at this point. What if this is the year where he is able to stay healthy in March and April, and he was, you know, wrapped in bubble all year long, and this is the year that he's able to stay healthy for a playoff run? Just getting in as a 6 or 7 seed, none of these teams in the East are. I mean, Cleveland's 38-9. Boston's still Boston. But Philly, if they're healthy, who knows? Maybe this is the year in reverse where it starts out horribly and then it ends wonderfully. Maybe it's just the opposite of what you're typically used to. I don't know, Tom. I got a hard time taking it out if I'm the Sixers. I get a hard time doing it if I'm them. I think you have to go for it. I really do. I think you have to go for it still.
Joel Embiid is getting paid $67 million in 2029. 2029, he's under contract.
I know.
If you think that this is going to be like the only shot for you potentially for you to make it, they got a whole host of other problems here. I think they tank, get that top six pick, and try again next year. Make sure that Joel Embiid doesn't play in any sort of international games, and you roll it back next year fully healthy and ready for training camp.
It's tough, man. It feels like a lose-lose. That's the truth. That's what it really feels like at the end of the day, a lose-lose for Philly. Let's take that quick break, Tom, and we'll be right back. Okay, Tom, to close out today's podcast, I want to have a little fun with an idea that our production team came up with to celebrate the trade deadline coming in a week. Does a team have to make a move? Or maybe they don't have to make a move. Tom Hab Erstro, you got all the answers. So we get some dad jokes, puns here, Tom. Do the Pacers have to make a move?
No, they don't have to make a move here, KOC. Look, Have or have not? What are the Indiana Pacers going to add to that core that they have? They already have Pascal Siakam. Did I say have or should I keep the have going? They already have Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton already locked up for the next several years. Miles Turner is an expiring deal, but why would you give up Miles Turner and not work out some sort of re-sign him in the offseason, play for the team he's always played for? They're going to have a top four shot every single year. I don't know what deal you're expecting the Indiana Pacers to make. I don't think they have any sort of urgency to make a deal here. What do you think? Like, should they put Jairus Walker and Naismith into a deal and try to get, I don't know, what is the piece that they would have an urgency to go acquire at this point?
Well, I mean, I think it's more the opposite. It's why the hell is Miles Turner involved in these trade rumors this week? Like, why would they trade Miles Turner? I'd say they don't have to make a deal. Like, you keep hearing Miles Turner this week in a bunch of reports, like the Lakers want to go get Miles Turner. Why would they trade Miles Turner? The Pacers are playing great basketball as of late. They've been stellar defensively. Turner's a big part of that. He's important to their offense as a screener, floor spacer, scorer, rebounder. Why would they screw that up right now? Pascal Siakam's playing at a high level. They already got their guy last year at the deadline. Haliburton looks back ever since the week-long break the Pacers got during the in-season, the NBA Cup. To me, just keep going out there, doing your thing. There's not a big acquisition to make that makes any sense for them right now. They don't have to make a move.
No, if Tyrese Haliburton or Pascal Siakam, if those guys were on like expiring deals, or if they were, you know, making noise about, you know, forcing a trade out of there, then there would be a sense of urgency. But no, they do not have to make a deal here. So I'm on the have not.
How about the Milwaukee Bucks? You saw the Bucks face the Portland Trailblazers this week, and they lost 125 to 112 against the Blazers. What do you think, Tom? Do the Bucks have to make a move?
They have to make a move, and they have to go get Zach LaVine. That's the guy. Let's make sure that Zach LaVine just goes, rotates around the Great Lakes. Like, he goes from Minnesota to Chicago and yeah, then just to Milwaukee.
It's actually like, kind of funny guy, when you think about it.
He goes from UCLA and then has to live in the Great Lakes, basically, for the rest of his career. No, they should go get that guy. Like, that's the guy.
You know, I've never been. I've never been to the Great Lakes. I've never been.
I'm just saying.
I'd like to visit there sometime, Tom. It looks nice. I like lakes.
In the summer, but in the winter? Beautiful. Come on.
I mean, I just moved from Southern California to Massachusetts.
Yeah, but you're
from there. I made that choice
there
for myself. I am from there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, Zach LaVine's from Washington State. He's dealt with cold and rain and snow.
Yeah, true. But I still think that's a trade that if you're Milwaukee, you have this window here with Damian Lillard for the next couple years and Giannis making him happy so he doesn't pull a situation like Anthony Davis did in New Orleans and say, I want out. So you have Chris Middleton, who's got three goose eggs in the point column this season from returning that injury, had another one where it's just like, they got to move now. They can't wait this out and let this play out with Chris Middleton and the inability to move and be Draymond Green from a wing position where, yeah, he can play good defense. He's a great veteran who can facilitate but can't score. At that salary slot, that is crippling for a team that wants to win a championship. So what do? You call up the guys right down the street and you say, hey, Zach LaVine, what's it going to take to get Zach LaVine on Milwaukee? And the salaries are going to be tough because as a second apron team, the Milwaukee Bucks can't aggregate contracts. And for Chris Middleton and Zach LaVine, it doesn't match up. You get a three-team deal onto the table. But I think you have to make a deal if you're Milwaukee, because this Chris Middleton contract, where he's getting paid next season on a player option, I think you dump that on some other team and you put in that 2031 first round pick and you try to get Zach LaVine on your squad. He's so good. And I think he'd be a perfect fit next to Giannis, Damian Lillard, and of course, Brooke Lopez as the rim protector. Because if Zach LaVine's going to succeed, you need to back him up with some elite defenders and rim protectors. And I think that's what Milwaukee has.
Yeah, I would love LaVine on Milwaukee. To me, that's a dream fit. I'd say they have to make a deal. LaVine's the guy I'd want to go get. I just don't trust Chris Middleton. He's up and down. He's had some good games. He's had some just horrible games. But even when he's having his good offensive games, he's just not the same guy defensively. He's just not. Zach LaVine is not a great defender either, but he's more consistent at a high level offensively. And LaVine, the high flyer that he is, the elite shooter that he is, I just think it would be beautiful with Giannis moving forward. One quick idea. On my For You page on X last night, I saw a trade idea.
Wait, you're getting trade ideas on your For You page? I love this.
On my For You page. And I'm gonna tweak the idea that's on there because it's from a Bucks fan at Paul Pressey 25. And I think his deal was a bit too leaning towards the Bucks. Here's the deal. Damian Lillard in the 2031 first round pick for De'Aaron Fox and Trey Lyles, a salary filler. He originally had Keegan Murray as salary filler, but Keegan Murray's too good for that deal. So Dame in 2031 first for De'Aaron Fox and Trey Lyles. Kings get a big splash. Vivek gets Damian Lillard and a great future first. Bucks reset their timeline with a younger guy, De'Aaron Fox. I don't think the Kings would do it. But I'm just throwing the idea out there because I thought it was a fun, creative idea. I have not seen anybody mention the Bucks. Bucks, everybody talks about go for Butler, go for LaVine. Nobody mentions go for Fox. So I just thought it was a fun idea to throw out there.
Interesting. Okay, so yeah, De'Aaron Fox.
I don't do it if I'm the Kings.
I don't think you do either. Damian Lillard, I think you would move him to a third team, facilitate him going to a real title contender. Because that contract, Sabonis is interesting. Sabonis with Damian Lillard offensively makes a lot of sense. But yeah, just defensively, I'm not there with Damian Lillard at this stage of his career. He needs elite defenders around him. And I don't think Sabonis is a great fit. And like, yes, you do get that 2031. But it just seems like you would reroute Damian Lillard in a trade like that. I like it from the Milwaukee side, though. Milwaukee with a younger player where you don't have that sense of urgency. Giannis just looking at Damian Lillard like, if it doesn't work out this year at that age, I feel like it might make Giannis happier. But Dame's ready to win a championship right now. Is De'Aaron Fox? Good question.
Last one here, Tom, of the teams. Do the Thunder have to make a move? We saw them lose against the Warriors on Wednesday night. Tough loss. SGA is 52 points. It's a game that you feel like they should have won. Oklahoma City this year has had these games, though, where they just don't shoot the ball well. They're 16th in the NBA in three-point percentage. Very up and down with a lot of their guys. Do they have to make a move, though?
They don't have to, but I want them to. So if this comes to a Brooklyn deal for Cam Johnson, yes, you have to. Like if Cam Johnson can be available, let's say KOC, let's say it's Aaron Wiggins and Cason Wallace would be the headliner here. Cason Wallace, Aaron Wiggins, and whatever picks make that palatable for Brooklyn, I think you make that move. The one thing that OKC needs is a big wing who can shoot at a high level. Isaiah Joe came off the bench against the Warriors and did what Isaiah Joe does. He hits shots. But you want a bigger guy, a stronger defender. And I feel like Cam Johnson on the Thunder, that would be unfair, man. It would be so good. And I think that's the sleeper team right now in all of these trade talks. De'Aaron Fox, Jimmy Butler. Does anyone move the needle for title contention or their title chances more than Cam Johnson on OKC? You know what? I'm going to say it. They had to make a deal for Cam Johnson. If they really want to make a championship, I do think they need to upgrade their wing shooting, and he'd be perfect on that team.
Man, I'm so right? split on them. I'm so split on the Thunder, Tom. I am. Because on one hand, Cam Johnson certainly helps. Great shooter. We saw what he did in a more condensed role for Phoenix when he was younger. We're seeing right now what he can do with a more expanded role with Brooklyn. He's a super talented offensive player, right? He just is. But he's also making over $20 million. That money can inflate with bonuses as well, and it would count for more in a deal as well. And Cason Wallace is a really nice young player. Aaron Wiggins is a good role player. So like in a more condensed role, is Cam Johnson offering significantly more than both of those guys? I don't know. I don't know, man. Like that's tough for me. But the other side of it, again, is like the Thunder have a mountain of draft picks. They have so many picks. And it's not like you get Cam Johnson. You couldn't just flip him again if necessary. If things didn't work out, it's not like he loses value. I think
Or are you going this way? Are you willing to move Lu Dort? Because you have Cason Wallace. Are you willing to move Lu Dort?
I don't want to move him. He's too good defensively, man. He's too important. He's big. He's a tone setter. And he's also a good shooter. He wasn't on Wednesday against the Warriors, but he's a 40% guy at this point.
I don't think you do it, but that's the contract that would need to go over there in order to facilitate that trade. There's not a great fit there unless you're willing to put Cason Wallace into a deal, and you're basically pushing your chips to the middle a little bit more. Chet Holmgren's coming back. Do you get enough? Do you have enough shooting to make you feel comfortable going in a series against Boston or Cleveland or whoever comes out of the Western Conference in that like real like pack of Western Conference teams that are below you? I feel like Cam Johnson would quiet a lot of the concerns that people have about OKC. For me, they're the title favorites, but there are nights where they can lose to a Golden State team without Draymond Green, and that's scary to me.
Last thing, Tom, Adam Silver, I was talking to Dan Patrick on his radio show this week and floated the idea of moving to 10-minute quarters rather than 12-minute quarters to get the game closer to 2 hours or under 2 hours. Does the NBA have to move to 10-minute quarters?
No, they don't have to. And I'm not just taking this from Michael Malone, who called it Barnum and Bailey NBA. He said, we don't need to do this or add a four-point line. I would love to see a four-point line. But he's like, we don't want to make this a circus like the Barnum and Bailey. And then Tom Thibodeau, of course, can you get more old school of coaches than Denver versus the New York Knicks on this news story? Like Adam Silver, if he was going to draw up two coaches who would weigh in on the 40 minute rule or the 4-point line that Malone was throwing out, you couldn't dream up a more curmudgeon, like two guys to talk about this. They are like the most old school, lunch pail guys, blue collar coaches in the league. So maybe we should have expected that. But two reasons why I don't think this is going to work out. One is for the NBPA to sign off on this, they're going to have to give up. The league is going to have to give up a ton because the NBPA's constituency is all 500 players. It's not just the top tier guys. LeBron James, does LeBron James want to play, a 40 minute game versus a 48 minute game? Maybe, but certainly not his teammates, because that's a lot of minutes that they could have had that they won't have anymore. If LeBron's going to play 36 minutes and there's only 4 minutes left for other guys, that's going to really, really antagonize a huge chunk of that players union. I don't see the players union signing off on something like this, because that is the mother's milk of all the role players in the NBA, is those minutes. And you cut 8 minutes from that, I just don't see how that benefits the union with all those guys fighting for their minutes to try to get that money.
I think it's silly for Silver to even recommend it when you want to talk about the length of games. Starting on time would be a start. If the game says 7:30, I shouldn't be waiting until 7:45. Let's start on time. Start on time, number one. How about we make replay reviews quicker? Instead of sitting around for 5 minutes for two, three bumbleheads to look at a screen and figure out what we can see in 10 seconds on TV, let's get that quicker. Like, there's like two quick, easy things. Start on time, make replay reviews move quicker. Two things. There's other things you could do too. The free throw stuff I'm more open to as well, but to me, moving from 12 to 10 minutes is so much more complicated, as you said, Tom, versus some of these other things.
Well, and like you said, there's ways, if Adam Silver isn't necessarily big on 40 minutes as he is on 120 minutes, 120 minutes meaning the 2 hour window on TV that he can sell to broadcasting partners and be like, we have a 2 hour window that you can program a nice 30 minute show after that or 1 hour show after that, rather than this 2 hours and change, which makes things awkward from an advertising and broadcast partner perspective. But like you said, start the game on time, have replay review and these breakdowns to check calls that we don't even know if we're getting right. And we're, it's the worst of both worlds, is that we don't know if we got the call right and we just wasted 10 minutes. And third, like, maybe you make free throws. A two-shot free throw is just a one-shot free throw that you get 2 points or zero, and you cut down on the Giannis Antetokounmpo take 2 minutes to go to the free throw line, and you can shave off time that way. So I think there's ways. A three-shot foul, you take one free throw, you get 3 points, or you take, if you miss it, you get zero. Those are ways that you can shave down the time. If the priority is getting that two-hour window, we can do that without making it a 40-minute game.
I'm with you, Tom. A lot of ways to go before you get to the quarter length. But, you know, that's all for today, Tom. Our bonus trade deadline edition show. Make sure you stay tuned for part two coming overnight. We're going to have Ariel Helwani on to talk Knicks. We're going to be talking about the games on Thursday night as well. Tom, thanks for joining me today, man.
Hey, have a great night and have a great weekend to all the listeners out there. It's always a blast to do this. I'm pumped and jacked as always. And have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one. Thanks again to Tom Haberstroh for joining me today. We'll be back again later tonight with Ariel Helwani talking about the Knicks. And we'll also be talking about Thursday night's games with Roosh Williams. Looking forward to having those conversations. Thanks to Mike and Emmy for producing us. And thanks to you for giving us a listen. Please give us a thumbs up on YouTube, a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. It really does help out the show. Hope you have a good rest of your day. We'll be back again tonight with part two.